All right, joining me for our third segment here today, Dr. Tony Hill and Dr. Whitney Lehman. And I know you guys are anxious to talk about something that you dearly love, and I think it's worthy of our discussion. The Simpsons 300th episode.
Yeah, we're big Simpsons fans.
Clearly one of the best shows in television history. Mm-hmm.
I admit, I'm not a fan, and it's not a subject I would generally deem worthy of discussion on this program, but hey, last week, Todd Mundt talked Simpsons for an hour. Terry Gross talked Simpsons for an hour. And if it's good enough for National Public Radio, I think it's good enough for us.
I think it was a Bravo special that featured the entire cast of The Simpsons, the people who did the voices a few weeks ago, too.
Well, I have in front of me TV Guide's cover. Now, they send me TV Guide for reasons I'm not clear on. You know, on the cover, Homer Simpson's, I have to admit, 300 episodes, 14 seasons, that is longevity. It is pretty much embroidered into American culture.
They're the primary colors of, like modern society. You can say, oh, this person's a little Marge, a little Homer, a little touch of Lisa sort of thing. And you can work things out.
And they've touched on every contemporary moral issue of 20th century. They've done it all.
Well, you know what's funny, too, is that people overseas, I mean, people from the UK are always saying, oh, The Simpsons, it's brilliant. And I gather that, you know, that being fans over in the United Kingdom must have extended to Keith Richards and Mick Jagger. Because they appeared on they appeared in the 300th show.
You know, in 1995, I was in Guatemala, and I was staying at a little language school. And they turned on the TV, and they watched Los Simpsiones, you know.
And español?
Yeah.
And Homero.
It was Homero, you know. And he had this very, you know, macho voice. And they redubbed an episode where, they find this Olmec, you know, like... figure. And so I think it had a Latin America tie-in, but they also, you know, just redub everything, and people loved it. Everyone was howling. I didn't understand the show at all in Spanish, but everyone was having a good time watching it.
You got to give it credit for the success that it has been.
It's an extremely creative show, too.
And to stay fresh for 14 years, where you still laugh, you're, you know, just belly laugh at, you know, these situations, you think they would have run out of ideas. It's not like they're adding characters, you know.
And it's wonderful because it's subversive as well. There's no question about it. The Christian next door is always lampooned. And
well, it's very strange that here it is Fox, you know, which is basically the Republican network, you know, headed by Rupert Murdoch. If there ever was, you know, an evil manipulative mogul, it certainly would be Rupert. And yet here is this subversive show, which is such a hit on his network that he just can't resist.
Well, they had a lot. Married with Children and In Living Color. Tracy Ullman, not so much, but we're all not traditional Christian TV shows, obviously. And those were big Fox hits as well. Simpsons has persisted. And
Murdoch himself has apparently did his own voice, appeared on an episode. At least they were talking on Todd Mundt. I guess he appeared on a show where he had like evil minion robots doing his bidding. Yet he appeared on the show, did his own voice, making fun of himself.
That's great.
So, gotta
get it. It's just, and Lisa has to be the most independent thinker of the group. She's a vegetarian Buddhist, you know, and there was a time where she was in a classroom and she said, well, what if you don't believe, you know, in this particular, you know, like philosophy? And they flash to a control room into the school where there's this little buzzer going and it says independent thought alert. You know, it's just like, should we flood the chamber? You know, is the response is like, let her go. She'll probably burn out sort of thing. You know, the whole show is just a series of attacking classically held beliefs and through a beer-drinking, oafish father's viewpoint.
The oafishness of the show, I think, is what's always rubbed me the wrong way. It's like the stupidity and sort of, you know, counterproductive behavior of, you know, the Beavis and Butthead type stuff that they do in the show, I think.
I think that's superficial compared to the real story.
I can't help but laugh out loud at the little touches they always add, the little jabs they get in at contemporary culture, like the show they had on Sunday night. They did a fake commercial for the young Bart Simpson for him having baby stink breath. It just was off the couch on that one.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple episodes where, you just laugh for an entire half hour and everyone talks about it for a week because it was just so funny, you know.
And the stupidity on the show, I find, is more clever than, say, Jerry Springer stupidity or, you know, Oprah and Maury,
well,
the
God.
Guests on Oprah and Maury yeah. are much more stupid, I think, than most of the humor on The Simpsons.
Well, you know, Matt Groening appeared, I think it was on Terry Gross, and talked about how, you know, speaking of the oafishness of the show, that, you know, he used to shrug it off and say, now, come on, you know, you're not going to act like Bart Simpson unless your dad acts like Homer Simpson, he said. But he added that, you know, now that I've had children and have them quote the show back to me, I realized that we didn't necessarily do America a big favor sometimes.
Oh, he did a tremendous service to America.
I think he did, too.
In what way?
Well, the humor involved there. And also, you know, if his children are repeating, you know, what are being said, then, you know, the show is a reflection of America itself.
Children repeating The Simpsons, I think, is probably one of the most harmless things they could be repeating, personally. Yeah. I think there's a lot of things that hear in rap music and whatnot
I
that probably shouldn't be repeated.
The Three Stooges poking people in the eye. I suppose there's worse role models out there. The article in TV Guide mentioned that President Bush himself decreed during the Republican National Convention that the nation ought to be more like the Waltons and a lot less like The Simpsons.
It's not though. That might be somebody's fantasy ideal of Christian America, but most Americans are not like the Waltons, thank God.
They're actually much more like Married with Children, if you held up a good mirror.
What I think is funny, apparently, that the writers in The Simpsons, after Bush said that, got their revenge by having Bart quip on the show, "We're just like the Waltons. We're praying for an end of the Depression, too."
But, I mean, there's so many classic episodes in The Simpsons.
Tell me a few of those. They aired the one about where he divorces his parents, I guess, with the baby stink breath.
Correct. But I think some of the best ones involve Montgomery Burns, Homer's boss at the nuclear power plant.
Uh-huh.
And there was this one episode where, you know, Montgomery Burns was born, I think, in the 1800s or something like that. He's a very old, sickly-looking man. So he goes into the doctor and says, "What's wrong with me?" And he says, "Well, curiously enough, everything. You know, like, you've got every known illness known to man." And it's kind of like trying to push soccer balls through a door. If there's 100 soccer balls, you just can't push any of them. But if we remove one signal illness, then all the other ones will spill forth and you'll become desperately ill, you know, sort of thing. And so he's just like, "I've got everything." He's like, "Yes, I've got the flu. Yes. I've hysterical pregnancy. Yes."
I guess they've had some fun with musicals on the show.
I think the best episodes are musicals. My favorite is probably Montgomery Burns. It was a take on 101 Dalmatians singing "See My Vest." That was really extremely funny.
Where all his clothes, he was dancing around singing a off-Broadway musical, and it was, he had all these endangered species like gorillas and silverbacks and that he'd made into vests and clogs and, you know,
and
little
was
outfits.
Breaking into
sort.
Song about having them.
Yeah, just dancing around.
He was going to, you know, very much like 101 Dalmatians, Cruella de Vil, he was going to make a coat or some sort of a suit out of puppies. And Lisa and Bart saw him doing this, and he was singing "See My Vest." His wardrobe was not going to be complete without a puppy suit.
Todd Munt, they did Streetcar Named Desire, musical.
That was great.
which sounded awfully funny.
That was extremely funny. And another one was the burlesque house. It was, you know, a whorehouse burlesque house in Springfield called La Maison Derrière. And that was another really funny musical episode, I think. They sang "We Put the Spring in Springfield." That was a pretty good one.
Well, and there's just something great inherently about a musical, because just the musical itself. I mean, if you're at work and you've got a tense situation, or, you know, you're in some, you know, other situation, it's rare to think that breaking into song and a choreographed dance is the solution, you know?
Right.
And yet in a musical, it just seems to flow, you know? This just seems like what should be done right now, sort of thing.
Well,
and so to have the cartoons actually do that as well, just is...
got comedy potential. I think of that line about someone describing opera. It said, "Well, unlike real life, when you get stabbed in the back, instead of bleeding and dying, you sing."
So here's a Simpsons clip that hopefully we won't get sued for playing, but it's downright funny.
"My name is Barney, and I'm an alcoholic."
"Mr. Gumbel, this is a Girl Scout meeting."
"Is it? Or is it that you girls can't admit you have a problem?"
Here's another one.
"Now, this is a room with electricity, but it has too much electricity. So, I don't know, you might want to wear a hat."
Uh-huh.
And so here's a collection of sound bites and clips of some of the more famous characters, and they're just so integrated into society now that you can't imagine life without dope.
Well, I don't know about that, but okay.
You can't imagine a good life without it, at least.
Yes, I'm sorry, I do not speak English, okay?
But you were just talking
to... Yes, yes, hot dog, yes sir, no sir, maybe, okay.
Bart, can we stop for ice cream?
Yes.
Bart, can we weigh the car at that weigh station?
Yeah. Bart, can we pick up that hitchhiker?
I don't see why not.
Bart, can we stop for ice cream?
Yes.
Hey, hey! I have asked you nicely not to mangle my merchandise. You leave me no choice but to ask you nicely again.
Matt Groening, I guess, on one of the shows was talking about the show he used to watch when he was a kid, very influential to The Simpsons, which was... Mr. McMillan, the theme song, please. That, of course, was the immortal opening strains of Rocky and Bullwinkle. Not a very well drawn cartoon, but god dang, it was funny.
Yeah, I liked that show. I liked Boris and Natasha. They were in Rocky and Bullwinkle, right? Yeah, were the villains. Yeah,
yes, Fractured Fairy funny. Tales, Sherman and Mr. Peabody and the Wayback Machine. Yeah, that was good stuff.
Growing up with The Simpsons, I look at the Rocky and Bullwinkle, and I think it's funny, but it seems so much more one-dimensional than The Simpsons do to me. Just because everything is a double entente, you know,
right.
On The Simpsons, and it's just so much
more
people working
on it. Well, they were certainly
taking
it up one more
It's a little more over the top and a little
more
complex.
It's more sophisticated.
And also it ran for 14 years, so you have so much established history on the show.
That is an awful lot.
You can overture something that happened a decade ago on your own show, you know? It has the glory of no one growing up, you know?
Right.
Bart's still in fourth grade. Lisa's still...
But they did introduce new characters, and they killed some of them off, too, like Ned Flanders' wife, Maude. That was a big event. They killed Maude off.
I didn't know they did
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they did.
Right. And Ned was always complaining to his minister that he felt as though he was coveting his own wife.
Well, what I think is interesting is that, you know, that here he is taking a cartoon that's pretty sophisticated like Rocky and Bullwinkle and on the show lampooning the sort of horrible, violent cartoons like Tom and Jerry with, I guess, his character Itchy and Scratchy. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the whole crux of every Itchy and Scratchy are Lisa and Bart are watching a cartoon show, and Itchy and Scratchy just do horrible, abominable things to each other. But
there's always bones and blood spurting and heads being chopped off. Very violent. And the kids are always laughing hysterically at it.
And just the most perverse things are happening to these creatures. And the kids are just rolling in laughter on the couch. And it's such a funny commentary that is what kids think is funny. You know?
Well, I think they borrowed a page. Cartoonist Eric DeCidas told me that that they apparently borrowed a page from the old National Lampoon. They did a thing called Kit and Caboodle, which was a takeoff on Tom and Jerry where, you know, the mice are making like dum-dum bullets to shoot the cat and blowing an ear off. And every time they do, he's actually bleeding, which I guess separates Homer Simpson if he gets injured, does not have his head turned into the shape of a frying pan and then come back.
No. He has lost a finger before, though.
Did it remain lost in subsequent episodes?
I guess he only had four to start with, but there was a very complex backward in time episode where he had a finger cut off and then he was looking for his finger throughout the entire episode. So they're not afraid to show some blood, but they rarely... You know, like have heads inflate like balloons or something absolutely cartoonish.
Right.
They try to keep it real.
I guess the show originated with Tracy Ullman?
Yeah, The Simpsons was just this brief skit on the Tracy Ullman show, and it was nothing like The Simpsons. It's a shadow of The Simpsons we see today, very crudely drawn, and the characters were very one-dimensional. I think Homer... at the time, I think all he did was basically say, let's go out and get frosty milkshakes. And Bart, he would strangle Bart. So at that time, that's all the cartoon involved, frosty milkshakes and strangling Bart. Why you? And he would strangle Bart.
Primordial Simpsons there.
But apparently it was pretty popular because it caught on and became the show that it did. But when you watch the first season that came out, it's so different than what it evolved into.
That's what I've heard.
It's pretty amazing.
So looking at the original Doonesbury cartoon strips, they're so crude, and yet the humor's there, but yet they're badly drawn.
Right. I mean, in the first season, like, they just attacked certain contemporary issues, but it was a lot of physical comedy as well. But now it's a very edgy show, and they'll make political comments all over the place. You know, you can't go 10 minutes without someone getting zapped pretty hard, or some established American tradition being, you know, like exposed to some extent.
Well, something else that's developing in TV that I wanted to talk about was, apparently, and I think this is such a sacrilege, they're bringing back this guy that plays the moron on the moron dad on what, Married with Children?
Al Bundy.
And he's going to play a revised version of Joe Friday on a new incarnation of Dragnet. This is wrong.
You know, it's
I heard he was good
on.
At that. Yeah. I didn't see it myself, but some people said the same thing. They thought Al Bundy playing a role like that, but then they seemed impressed with his performance. I don't know. I haven't seen it, but that's what I heard.
You know, the same thing was said about Patrick Duffy playing JR's brother. You thought of him as Man from Atlantis, but, you know, like, without the webbing, it became clear that he wasn't going to swim.
Fox is talking about how they're doing a reconfiguration of the old Dragnet, and bringing back a comedy actor. I was thinking, you know, why don't we bring back, like, George Goober Lindsay returns to TV as Perry Mason. You can just see how that would go down.
Well, I think Carrot Top would be a good Perry Mason.
Where were you on Night of the 12th? Where were you? Where? You got anybody that can back you up?
Now, I gather that Dragnet is well before you guys' time.
I have seen reruns, but it wasn't one of my favorite shows, so I haven't seen too many episodes.
It's on Nick at Night, I think, now.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain why this show that is so stodgy and so, you know, matter of fact, just the facts, ma'am. That's what it was celebrated as being, just this, you know, not flashy show, somehow wins you over. I don't know how to explain this, but it was a huge hit on radio in the 40s, I guess, and 50s, made the transition to TV, but it was all about Jack Webb. Mm-hmm. And I've got a CD. Let me just play an excerpt from, you know, some of what I think made Dragnet work.
It was Tuesday, May 8th. It was cool in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Lorman. My name's Friday. I was on my way over from the office, and it was 10:13 p.m. when I got to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital, the waiting room. Hi, Frank.
Joe?
How's he doing?
I don't know. I'll talk to Dr. Sebastian.
How's it look?
Well, not too good. Slugs embedded in his lung caused a hemorrhage. He's getting a transfusion.
What do you got on it?
I just talked to the guys who came in with him for a minute. They didn't have a lot.
Yeah.
Call came in from a man who owns a newsstand at the corner of Normandy and Willowbrook.
Is he the witness?
Yeah.
Anything there?
I don't know. We'll have to talk to him.
What do you got on the victim?
It was just the fact that, you know, it was this sort of, like, you know, deadpan delivery that somehow it works. I just can't see them, you know, they're going to put decaying bodies, they said, chasing a serial killer. They're going to use the usual whiz-bang stuff for television, and I just think they're going to step on what made Dragnet work.
Well, maybe it'll be updated and more appropriate for...
More crowd-pleasing.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
I mean, Dragnet itself, I've seen those old episodes, and there's something appealing about their deadpan, you know, delivery. And also, in that era, everything had a laugh track in it, so it was kind of nice to see something without a laugh track in it. It's much more bearable to watch.
But who really wants to... I personally don't think I want to sit for half an hour and watch a Serious as Cancer show, unless it's a documentary of some sort, just some show where no one cracks a smile and the hard-boiled detectives are doing their job. I don't know.
Well, also, too, I mean, his straight up the middle, this is how it should be sort of thing now seems sort of ridiculous. What were you thinking?
Right.
That's just inappropriate for modern, you know.
There's like a classic episode of Dragnet on TV in the late 60s where Joe Friday goes after this Timothy Leary-like character who's promoting drugs. And the anti-drug message, I think, it's pretty much of a camp classic to those who saw that episode back then. It's a little out there, although it's, you know, very much in keeping with our current war on drugs, which I think is what makes it funny.
Yeah, I mean, just the ridiculous extrapolations of drugs and what it'll do to your life. You know, you had a beer, that's why you killed your mom. You know, like, you know, it's just so clear to him. There's just no ambiguity in his worldview.
Marijuana is a gateway drug. You start smoking marijuana, next thing you know, you're on heroin. I mean, as kids, we sort of would watch that stuff and sort of laugh. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a pretty sad commentary that that sort of, you know, thinking has, you know, returned to the fore.
Yeah. Like the Nancy Reagan, just say no to non-pharmaceuticals, yeah. Evidently, right. Was
I'm
her
sure
mission.
Nancy Reagan's medicine cabinet was chock full of diet pills, uppers, downers, you name it, all prescription, though.
Well, we've mentioned this on this show before, but it's probably good for one good go before we go out here, that Ronnie, when he spoke here at UCD, I was in the audience that day back in the 70s, and when they asked him about making birth control information more available, why he was vetoing a bill, he looked at the crowd and said, "Whatever happened to saying no?" Which I'm sure was a prelude to his anti-drug campaign. But of course, they did delete from the card deck of questions for Trivial Pursuit, which was in the original batch. The question they asked on the Trivial Pursuit card deck was, how pregnant was Nancy Reagan when she married Ronald? And the answer was 2 months. She worked very hard to get the doctor say that when Patty Davis was born, she was premature at 7 months, and the doctor refused. So I guess Nancy herself sometimes fell down in the just say no department.
She definitely did. And she said, I think I read something in her biography that she actually admitted that she was a few months pregnant. But as, you know, some sort of warning to all teenagers, they were going to get married anyway.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, so just keep that in mind. If you're going to do something, just plan on being married, then it's okay.
As we've been taught many times in the political theater, it's not a matter of doing something bad. It's just a matter of getting caught and getting in trouble for it. So they somehow weren't put on the cross for their own actions, but they went after
the
everyone.
Teflon with president. Yeah. He was called that for a reason. Well, guys, thanks. It's been fun. Come again.
Thank you. We will.
All right. Dr. Tony Hale, Dr. Whitney Lehman. This is Radio Parallax on KDVS 90.3. I'm Douglas Everett, and you should stay tuned for Todd Urich on Hometown Atrocities, because it's some very interesting and eclectic music for your listening pleasure. We'll see you next week.